Welcome back, everyone, to Innovative Leadership. I'm Ryan Stickle. With me, as always, is Stephanie Hurd.
Welcome back.
And we're back here at the friendly confines here at Innovative HQ in Hagerstown in our conference room. And we are back here with, once again, you probably know what I'm going to say, another special guest, Kimberly Mensel. She's the Director of Cybersecurity and Aerospace at the Maryland Department of Commerce, in addition to plenty of other roles, which I'm sure we'll get into today. Kim, thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much, Ryan and Stephanie. It's a pleasure to be here.
We are so excited to have you, especially, yeah. I think the legislative session is still in session, correct?
Yes, it is. Sign day is actually April 8th, so everybody in the state of Maryland is looking forward to the end of that. hopefully a very successful session as it goes through.
Well, we're glad that we were able to steal you away for just a little bit of time, because I know that's a busy time of year for everybody over at the state.
Yes, absolutely. Much appreciated. Before we really get into it today, as always, you know, we'll have our guests introduce themselves a little bit, some of your perspective, your career, your life, whatever you want to bring to the table today that we can discuss. I'll let you take over for a minute or two here to tell the audience all about yourself.
Oh, well, thank you, Ryan. So my name is Kimberly Mensel. I am the Director of Cybersecurity and Aerospace for the Maryland Department of Commerce. I also lead the efforts for AI, artificial intelligence, and quantum. So those are emerging technologies across the state. I'm fortunate enough to have the opportunity to work with the governor's office on a variety of technologies. But I am external facing. So I deal with all the businesses. I deal with the strategy development for those particular areas, which actually I'm working on right now. I also deal with providing resources and any type of networking connections as well in terms of the tech industry. I'm also very fortunate to deal with the international team. So I have the privilege of traveling with them when they need a SME in technology. I always go to InfoSec every year, which is in London. That's actually coming up in June again. So I get the opportunity to work with our UK counterparts. Japan. So we have Asia, Australia, so another continent, a variety of other European countries, Spain, Kingdom of the Netherlands, Germany. So they're all pretty interesting to work with. And now I guess I'll be working a lot with LATAM as well, the Latin American countries and Brazil and some others. So it's a really interesting role that I'm in order to do that. But mainly I'm looking at the development of the ecosystems for technology with across the state. And that can involve anywhere from relationships with commercial businesses to government entities, three-letter agencies and some four as well, as well as our academic institutions, which are very near and dear to my heart, because I think that we're actually preparing for the future by building those strong academic partnerships across the state.
Wow. Okay. So when did you first realize you wanted to work in technology? When did that passion kind of arise in you?
Oh, Ryan, you're so nice. The passion. I do have a strong passion for technology. And it wasn't really a prevalent aspect of my house growing up because it was very expensive during that time, I think. And so not everybody had, you know, PCs and laptops. And of course, there were no laptops that didn't really exist necessarily.
Yeah.
but I did go to college. I went to Loyola University. It was Loyola College. Now it's Loyola University. I did do my degree in business administration, specifically in accounting, but I really enjoyed the technology aspect of those classes since it was part of my degree. When I got out, I worked in accounting as an auditor for a year or two and then really wanted to go into technology. And at that time, in the late 90s, early 2000s, I was able and fortunate enough to work with a technology firm called ProTech. They're still up and running today. And I trained to be a programmer, and I've ended up programming, working in web development, which I'm sure you're all very familiar with here, as well as a variety of other aspects, databases, et cetera, et cetera. And taking that knowledge with me, I ended up saying I wanted to teach as well, got into the educational systems, and ended up teaching technology as well as a variety of other things, and had been doing that for several years. Then I also picked up several certifications along the way, two CCNAs, some CompTIAs, some other things, and a couple more grad degrees. I'm finishing up my third master's with cyber. Yes, last class.
Good for you. Congrats.
Can't wait. Yeah. I'm like, I don't know if I can do the PhD. I don't know if I have it in me at this point. But it's been a really good opportunity. I've been a program manager, a network administrator. I've been, an IT manager, a variety of jobs. So I've done a lot of different roles within the technology industry. And so I have I understand the cybersecurity aspect, the networking aspect, the software, the hardware, all those particular things, and how they all come together. Now, of course, I'm entering into AI and quantum, and they have been my latest passions as well. Yes. And I'm very fortunate that the state is highly motivated and involved, like in AI right now, especially with the governor's latest executive order that he did in January.
AI has been. It's so funny how I've seen it kind of reflect on our podcast within the last year, because our first few episodes, I mean, I don't think we even thought about discussing AI, even though, it was still kind of this fun thing. Like ChatGPT became such a big thing over the past like year or two. So it kind of amongst the masses, AI has become this kind of buzzword, but we hadn't really talked much about it because, I mean, for starters, we're not a technology first podcast, we're people first. So the tech stuff never really came in, but the past few episodes, we're talking to these leaders and AI is kind of just coming up organically and what are they feeling? So, I mean, this is probably, as good as any time to dive into that with AI. What is the number one thing businesses, or at least in your opinion, businesses are feeling right now as it relates to AI? Is it exciting? Is it fear? What do you feel is happening with AI as this kind of buzzword we're hearing?
I love it how you set that up, Ryan. Yes, there's excitement, there's fear. I also think there's a sense of FOMO within the businesses, fear of missing out, because nobody wants to be left in the dust. So they want to make sure that they're taking an opportunity to utilize that AI technology and really make their businesses run more efficiently, really integrate it in at the certain, various points. Now, the thing is this, they have to make sure that it is the right thing for them to integrate within their business, because not every problem is solved by AI. Mm-hmm. So I think that's really careful or really imperative for these businesses to see what is the best use of that. And so one of the things we're doing is we're looking at use cases as well. I have the fortunate opportunity to work with the government in Maryland. And of course, as I was referring to the executive order that the governor has announced for AI, and I had the privilege of being in Annapolis that day and watching him sign it, which, is one of those really cool things I get to do with my job. And, it's not every day. But he was really key on modernizing the state of Maryland. And in doing so, he's utilizing the AI technology internally within the state. So I have an opportunity to sit on the AI subcabinets, which are all the secretaries across the state, across all the agencies, and really discuss what that's going to look like, that rollout, that progression, how we're going to do that. And my role on that is really to look at it in terms of the economic development of AI. So I'm not necessarily worried about the technology. I understand it and there's different pieces to it. But, what does it look like in terms of supporting the AI ecosystem in the state of Maryland? AI, or I should say AK, that was really fun. AK, our business structure in the state of Maryland. So I've been taking the opportunity, the time to reflect on what is that ecosystem? What does that look like? And what I'm finding is that as I go around and talk about AI with different businesses, it really does span across all different sectors. And I always said cybersecurity, I'll take this from Chris Cleary, who was the principal of cybersecurity for the Navy. He just retired. Cybersecurity is like peanut butter. It spreads across all sectors. And I almost feel like, I know, it's the greatest quote ever. I did get permission from him to use it.
That's great.
But I feel like AI is very similar. It's spreading across all sectors, but it's how we're utilizing it across all these different sectors. And some businesses, it is a major part of their business. It is integrated. It is something that they're doing. If you took AI out of their business, they would no longer, be running any longer. There are certain businesses where they're incorporating it in, as AI whitewashing is kind of a component. So their business is still going, but they're really integrating AI. There's AI as a service. So it's like DataBridge and some of these other major data centers where they're providing the infrastructure for companies who want to use AI but don't have, obviously the hardware to run it necessarily. And then, you've got businesses that are, or you've got companies that are really providing AI as a solution. So I'm calling them solution providers at this point. And then right now, the other piece that I'm looking at, because I have to put all these companies and organizations in buckets. The last one really is like the research and innovation. So sometimes I put the academic institutions in there, like Johns Hopkins or Morgan State or University of Maryland, and then some companies as well who are looking to do proposals and really work on innovative things as well. So in my development of the ecosystem, which I'm, you know, which was given to me, I really have to meticulously look at it. How are they using AI? And that's the important thing, because I don't see how I can provide resources to an ecosystem without understanding what really makes up that ecosystem.
Do you feel like there's a common education gap that you encounter when it comes to AI? Because it's this big, new, fun thing, and everybody seems to want it, but I feel like there's a lot of people who might not quite understand what that means when you say, I want AI in my business, or, you know, could they say broadly, I want AI? Well, what do you mean you want? Like, what solution do you want? How do you want to use it? It's just, I want it. So what are there common education gaps when it comes to that you encounter?
Definitely. And really, when you think about that, it kind of attributes back to that FOMO. They want it in there. They don't know how they want it, but they want it in their business so they can put it on their website or advertise it that, yes, we too use AI. And I completely understand that. So you do have a gap in terms of AI education, professionals. Now, AI has been around for a long time.
Yeah.
You know, it's in the form of ML. So let me just get this straight out of the way too. People come up to you, and I have to answer this all the time about AI. According to MIT, which is who I look at as, okay, you know, this is MIT.
Pretty credible.
Pretty credible source, right? I looked them up. I looked up IBM. I looked up Cornell. I looked up a variety of universities. It was like, how are you describing what is AI? Mm. You know, because a lot of times you're like, well, AI and ML, they're not the same thing, and et cetera, et cetera. So right now we're using AI as the overarching term for anything that encompasses like ML, you know, LLM, you know, large language models, any type of modeling, anything that's got to do with it is underneath AI umbrella, if that makes sense. And then everything else and how we're utilizing it, really, it's like an onion. You go down each layer and it gets more and more complicated. And also you have to look at the AI and to what degree you're using AI, you know, whether it's, you know, a high level of AI, a low level of AI. So really that you've got that. So then so to answer your question, you have that education gap that I think you're trying to service, because you want people to understand the technology and you want them now. You don't want them 5 years from now. You want them now. So part of with the company, though, which you have to think about is what processes do I have where I'm going to utilize AI? And there's different solutions. There is companies that will say, come in, and this is those solution providers, and say, we've got, we call it a COTS, a commercial off the commercial technology off the shelf or whatever. And those are the ones that, you know, they might have like Copilot from Microsoft, or they might have something else, which is perfectly fine and acceptable. And they're utilizing that to provide solutions for these different companies. When I say different companies, I'm talking about a variety of things. It's not just tech companies. We're talking about life sciences, manufacturing, finance. I ran into a company that's doing AI with entomology. That was a very interesting conversation. I'm like, explain to me with bugs how this works.
Yeah.
They were very kind. And so they, you know, they went and they broke that down for me and how they're using imaging and all, and how they're recognizing the type of bugs, you know, utilizing the images, you know, through AI. And I was like, okay, that's cool. So you're using the technology that way. So it's really about finding the right solution, you know, whether it's you're creating algorithms, you know, out of developing algorithms, which needs maybe a data scientist or somebody that's an AI engineer, or whether you're utilizing AI as part of the overall solution, and you're using something like Copilot. So
yeah,
it all depends on usage.
We participated in a AI panel the other month, and it was interesting hearing business leaders talk about different ways that they have been leveraging AI in their business. Mm-hmm. And there was one woman on the panel who was talking about, like, she it was basically brought in to kind of transform her department and leverage AI in her finance position. And then you had other people that are like, oh gosh, I just, you know, that's not for me. We don't have the resources to do it. And somebody made the comment, if you are a business leader and you think that you're not leveraging AI in your company, go ask your employees. Because odds are, even if you haven't leveraged it at the company level, somebody on your team is probably out there has figured out a way to leverage these tools. And there was a consultant on the panel, and he said, you know, when we are brought in to companies to help them figure out, you know, how to better leverage technology,
right,
we have uncovered people that have essentially outsourced their entire job that are just really smart. And those are the people, don't be afraid of that. You know, those are the people that you can utilize to help. Okay, they have cracked the code on how can this apply in our specific business. Utilize them as your champions of it. Can you talk a little bit about like how to look for that product champion? Maybe if you yourself are not sure how this might apply to your business, like what kind of person just really dives into this to look for how to, you know, how to help utilize that in your company?
Sure, sure. And I think that's actually a really good point that you made as well. Just to go back, that you were talking about what the business leader said is that, you know, with AI, you want to utilize it in your company and you're utilizing it to make your company more efficient, you know, in order to, and this was actually from another tech company that's in the state that said that. And I'm like, yeah, that's what we're using it for. We're not using it just for the sake of it, you know, and you really need to find the appropriate case, the appropriate solution, you know, utilizing AI technology. And so we all use AI at some point in our lives. That's just the way it is. If you've got a phone, you're probably using AI. I mean, there's so much, you know, so much technology out there. Now, I will say also that the people that are afraid, before I go on to your, I haven't forgot, I will come back to that. But people are afraid of AI because they think of the Terminator. I'm like, your toaster's not going to come alive and take over your network, okay? Like, that is just not happening. Well, we hope it doesn't happen. But, you know, but that.
Not yet. Or, not for a while.
Or even like someone, I think a lot of people see how great AI can be, and when it's leveraged properly, it can do these amazing things. And they picture their cubicle, and they picture a robot sitting there, and it's just, well, this AI person took my job, and now I don't have a job because the computer can do it just as well as I can in a fraction of the time, or so they think. I was going to ask you about that anyway, like, because we talked about earlier that people fear what it's going to do, but it's also exciting. But I think it's, you get down to really the workforce level, the employee level, there's a fear of like, this is going to come for my job and take over. And we've had these conversations, you know, over generations. I feel like this, a new thing comes along and it's, you know, whether it's manufacturing, technology, whatever it might be, people fear, well, my job's going to be gone. What's your message to those people also? Because it is really scary. I think it's a valid feeling.
No, and actually that's where I was going with this as well. So I'm going to come back to your question and answer that as well. So it is so important to make sure that we stress that AI is not taking over a job. It's transforming how we work. And so that's the important difference. And a lot of companies, and we're speaking to CEOs that maybe aren't as adept with AI. I mean, there are varying scales of understanding of the technology, but the people that are grasping, and to come back to your question about the champion for AI, these are the people that are looking at improving processes. These are the people that are not afraid to move forward. And that is a very scary concept for a business to change what they're doing, their processes, rely on technology to maybe do something they've been doing correctly for 30 years or 20 years or 10 years. And it makes sense. And it's why fix it if it's not broken, right? Yeah. And they don't want to do that. Unfortunately, of course, the toothpaste is out of the tube. And once you squeeze it out, you can't put it back. So what do we do now? Now we have to move forward with it. And so it is not about taking over your job. It's about transferring or transforming your job. You know, your job is, you're still going to have your job. That's not it. How are you going to include AI? You're just going to use your skills better instead of doing the same monotonous things over and over and over. It's like when machines came in and we automated. This was a form of AI from many years ago, right? In the manufacturing industry. Mm-hmm. Now we have advanced manufacturing. They came in, instead of the person, you know, putting the knob on the same system over and over and over, which is very monotonous. And nobody gets enjoyment out of that. Come on, that's not. It was a job. It was great at the time. And I'm glad they did it. But with that automation, they were able then to take them away from standing on the floor to using the machine, to using them in other places within the business. And I will give you a quick example real quick, even in technology. So about a year ago, before, you know, this whole thing kind of exploded with AI, and I know we can talk about ChatGPT and generative AI, and that's where everybody is now. It's public and everybody's got AI on their lips. But it was about a year and a half ago, and I ran into a gentleman who runs, who's the CEO of a web company, and he designs websites and does web technology and all. So, you know, we're talking about, he has, you know, writers, content writers, designers, and everything of, you know, websites. And I looked at him and I said, well, you know, are you utilizing AI? He goes, yes, I fully embraced AI. And I'm like, how do your writers feel about this? You know, because you've got content writers, you've got editors, and of course their livelihood depends on, you know, on what they produce. And you think, well, generative AI, that's just going to come and take their jobs. That was, you know, the prevailing thought process. And he goes, no, he said, we embraced it. They use, say, ChatGPT or generative AI. I don't remember specifically what it was at this point, but they use a type of generative AI to create the content, the initial pass of the content for, say, that web page or that section. He said, then their job, they use their editing skills then. They don't have to spend all that time going through that and creating that. We're just going to use our skills to go in and edit it, fact check it, make tweaks to it. So their job has changed. They don't have to sit there and come up with everything or all this, the initial draft of it. Now they can just go back and, you know, edit it and use their skills in that way. So, I mean, their job has not been, it's not gone. It's still there. It's just transformed differently.
Yep.
So
this podcast is an example. The platform that we are recording on right now leverages AI to automatically edit, and when it processes the audio content, we were just talking about, you know, Ryan can go in and edit things out intentionally, but background noises, if a siren, you know, a fire truck goes down the street, it's pretty darn good at recognizing that stuff and just pulls it straight out.
You know? They just announced a new feature coming out where you click a button and we can get rid of all the ums and uhs, which I wonder if me saying that clearly supposed to be used in conversation, if it would cut that, it's the things. But again, mm-hmm. I'm a human, I'm going to edit it anyway. But if it can just clean up some stuff that it knows, no, they're not going to want this, and I can tell it what I want, then yeah, we can leverage that. I think it's just being able to look at how you do things in a completely different way. Like, things can update and things can change. I don't think there's a job on earth right now you can look at and say, well, yeah, they've done it that way forever and there's no other way to do it. It's never been updated. No, I mean, you got to be able to evolve with this stuff. And I think it's pretty easy for us as tech people,
right,
oh, yeah, to look at things and say, oh, it's just a new thing. Just update it and change it and we'll move on and and go on with our lives. But yeah, a lot of people just, it's kind of human nature for some just to look at things, and change is hard. You know, whether it's your job or in your life, on your phone, whatever it's going to be, change is difficult. And that kind of leads me into my next question a little bit, if we want to shift gears.
Sure.
You know, working with tech-minded people, we'll say, mm-hmm. for most of your professional career, if not all of it, we kind of probably have a perception here being on the sales side of things at an IT company. What's the biggest difference you feel between kind of these tech-minded people versus the non-tech people and how they kind of interact and how they get their job done?
That is actually really an awesome question, because as I go through, I obviously encounter both types. And I love both types because I need both of their perspectives to solve a problem. I think, and you actually, we talked a little bit earlier before the podcast about my philosophy for management and whatever. And I call it the King Arthur's Round Table, because I am a facilitator, but I want everybody around my table with all their different perspectives. And it does fit in kind of with the governor's, you know, having everybody's perspective, you know, looking at diversity and whatnot. But it goes beyond that. It goes really to, I want everybody's perspectives because I'm not going to think of everything. And I am a self-proclaimed geek. And honestly, Lieutenant Governor Miller also is a self-proclaimed geek. She is fabulous. She was an engineer before she became Lieutenant Governor. So she's great with that. And one of the things is that we get so embedded and so wrapped up in the technical problem. Like, if I'm going to sit there and program something, I get really into the weeds. But then we forget about the human aspect of it sometimes. And, you know, when you're like, this is great. And I have been guilty of this, you know, many years ago. I'd be like, I came up with this great way to do this, this great program. Here's this function. And then you give it to somebody and they're like, what is this? This is stupid. This is not how I work. And I'm like, oh, okay. You know, so you have to go back and really understand how people function, you know, what is their mode of operation and whatnot. So I really do like the idea of having both sides put together, because it is a marriage of the two, to be honest with you.
Yeah. And I think it's kind of that battle between, I guess we've had a couple different opinions on this, but that term soft skills versus ones and zeros. And some things are completely black and white. If I look at a computer and there's an issue and I can identify it, that is what it is. That is a truth that is universal and you can't really argue against it. But in sales, you talk to somebody and maybe they're kind of in between on something. You can't really put a number on that. It's just kind of like when it's emotion and thought, it's hard to quantify things. And I think some people, it's just easier for them to quantify those things and to do that. And some people kind of thrive when things are kind of in that gray area and it's different every time you do something. And so I think, you know, that's why we end up in kind of the realms we end up in. And some people can kind of merge between both. And that's a little bit of a skill in itself. But okay. Yeah, I wanted to hear your thought as well, because I think we all kind of have the same idea of how it goes. But I think, you know, at least the innovative, we're all cool with that. And I think we kind of thrive in that we can go to one person or go to another. And we're going to get probably different answers, but there's value in both, because you mentioned diversity. That's diversity of thought right there. I mean, that's two people. We're just wired differently, and that's okay. Like, we don't have to fight each other. There's no internal wars or struggles here. It's like, yeah, that's, some people have expertise and are wired to look at things this way, and some are the other way. So it's okay. Like, I think it's kind of fun to bring people on and talk with people and kind of recognize that sometimes, because each guest is completely different in how they approach certain things. So I wanted to get your thoughts on that, because it was just like, it's always just like a fun little thing. I don't know, in office dynamics, like you can just pinpoint that stuff when you see it. So it's really fun.
Well, I think you know, when you were talking about AI and getting back to, you know, the reason a business would use it is because it makes you more efficient. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of the people that are really enjoying AI right now naturally just really enjoy technology, and they get some personal value out of it. So that's why they go all in with it. So that's why that person that maybe doesn't see technology as a hobby looks at it and is like, but how does that make sense for me? So I think as we're seeing more of those types of people adopt it, that's when you get those light bulb moments to go off and be like, oh, okay, that could make my life easier, but I'm probably not going to do it as a hobby. And anytime there's new technology, it's the hobbyist technologists, I think, that adopt it first, because it's cool, right?
I love that, Stephanie. That is so very accurate. And it's funny when you say that as well. And I'm going to just jump over to like workforce just real quickly. As a teacher and whatnot over the years and professor, one of the things I always tell my students, or that I talk to anybody that I'm giving any kind of career advice to, is like, technology should be something you enjoy, like outside of work, if you're going down this path necessarily, like the path of, you know, I want to be in, you know, technology in some way, but also that you're doing it outside of work. Mm-hmm. And that is so important. We would always tell, you know, students that were involved in networking and all, it's like, build your own network at home. Play with it at home. If you enjoy that, but that's how you learn. Mm-hmm. You know, books are great. You know, content online is great. Anything like that is great. The thing is, though, is you have to apply those skills. So application of skill is really, really important. It's kind of like, you know, use cases of AI or cyber or quantum or anything. It's how do you apply it? And you have to apply those skills.
How do you approach situations or conversations with people you know are the complete opposite, where technology is like a burden almost? It's they don't want to learn this new stuff, because it's, you know, it can be difficult. It can be a little annoying if it's just not your thing. How do you approach those conversations with those people? Because they do exist, and, you know, they have their opinions on technology.
I'm laughing because, and I know he'll never hear this, but my father is a fabulous example of this. He's a wonderful human being. He was in the Baltimore City Police Department for 27 years. God bless his soul. And so, you know, he has done so much. He's intelligent, and I'm very grateful for everything. But he does not text. He will not text me. He finally got his cell phone a couple years ago, and he only uses it to call. And I'm like, you know, it's just, he will not get on social media, you know, so this is just not his thing. He's never been a technologist. You know, he didn't even like it when they put the computer in his police car all those years ago. So it's kind of funny, you know, so I'm used to dealing with somebody like that. And I think it really depends on in the situation that you're dealing with them. So like my dad, I'm like, that's okay. You know, I just find other means of handling him. In terms of business, I don't really run into a lot of business-minded individuals that are very much, you know, against technology necessarily, because I think they see that it is so imperative for them to be successful these days. Sometimes, you know, you do get the occasional individual that's like, well, I'm not on social media, or I'm not touching AI or quantum. That's they've kicked the can down the road 20 years, which mm-hmm. I can tell you is not true, but we won't go there, you know. So all you can do is just like, okay, is just listen to what they have to say, yeah. You know, and be understanding of that they're just, you know, you're not going to stand there and convince them that technology is worth their time. So you just sort of let them go.
And I think listening and having empathy, like they kind of need to be built in. Because I mean,
sure,
we as an IT company deal with people all the time who might not love technology. And, you know, we prefer the leaders love technology, but that doesn't mean every single person in a business is going to. And, you know, as long as they're willing to just, you know, it's a two-way street. Hear us out. We're trying to help you resolve this issue. Here's what you do. And it's like, okay, like let's, if we just can just meet in the middle a little bit, it doesn't have to be the end of the world. Cause I think the generational divide matters as well. Like mm-hmm. when you hit a certain age, it's just a little bit harder to learn things. I think probably once your brain develops, right? You turn 25. It's the reason I think a lot of people tend to listen to the music they liked when they were in college or TV shows. And, you know, I'm guilty of still watching reruns of the same thing over and over because my brain just doesn't, you know, I'm learning enough in life. I don't need to take on these new things. And, you know, in these people's lives, they might feel that the new technology is unnecessary.
Right.
And to us, that's, you know, almost blasphemous to say. But in their lives, you know, they're cool with, they have their old TV and they don't have a smartphone and they're fine with that. But when you go to work sometimes, there's a new laptop that we're setting up for you. And here's this new application we use for this line of business. And that is an essential part of your job function. So that's kind of where you have to meet in the middle and compromise. Well, in your personal life, okay, that's fine. But in your work, this is kind of how it is now. And I think AI is probably going to be a bigger role of that going forward, where it's like, this is kind of how the world works. I remember even, you know, when I was in school, and this was years ago, a substitute teacher would come in, you know, it was an older lady, and she said, you know, I'm going to retire soon, and I probably still could teach, but you have to know how to use a computer now, and you take attendance on there, and you do this and do that, and they are making it mandatory to know how to use these devices. And she says, I just have never been that way teaching. And she says, I'm just going to get out of it because it's not, you know, and she's older. She had the benefit of I'm sure being able to do that. But it was so interesting. And that was kind of eye opening for me to hear like, oh, this stuff is kind of pushing people out who just don't want any part of it. And I was probably 10 when I heard that. And so you can imagine now, I mean, it's hard to imagine, like, I think you said any job now where you don't deal with technology.
Exactly.
So I just always wonder the generational divide has always been really interesting to follow, because we have stories in the office of people, not even, you know, customers or clients, it's people we know in life just not willing to accept it. And we're obviously, you know, we're pretty open to technology here, I'd say. So it's funny to hear those people. I wanted to shift gears once again,
sure,
to talk about education. Tell me about that kind of side of your professional life and what drives you to want to be an educator.
Yes, yes. And that's actually really interesting right now because I shifted. I think I've taught every grade level at some point with technology and whatnot. High school, I enjoyed teaching high school as well. That's why I actually met some really cool students. And a lot of my former students are still in touch with me, and they work at the NSA, or, you know, they're finishing up their college degrees or whatever. So it's been very rewarding in that way. But I have been teaching collegiately for about 8 years now, 9 years, something along those lines.
Wow.
So a variety of places. And I do have great stories from them as well. I think as an educator, I learn as much from them as hopefully they learn from me. So, you know, just because you're teaching them content and whatnot and guiding them through this particular class, they also have a lot to give back as well. And sometimes it's just that perspective aspect as well. I'm like, oh, I didn't think about it in those ways. So they'll bring up questions and I'm like, you know, that's a really good question. I'm going to have to go check that out. And it can even be about what's going on currently in, you know, within technology or modern education or whatever. But I will say, as an educator as well, from I have to also stipulate by saying I did not teach this past semester because I've been so busy with work. I couldn't teach my Python class. I was like, I miss my students. Mm-hmm. I love my students, but I just was unable to do so. But having said that, I think education is also changing, and it has to change. And a big thing is adding, we'll just say, computer science as a requirement to our education system. And I'm going to speak on behalf of Maryland, and I've already made this quite clear. And luckily, we have some good senators and whatnot that are really pushing for there to be changes in the education system. And with that, you know, our students need this, because not necessarily that they're all going to be programmers or network engineers or AI development specialists or engineers or quantum, engineers or whatever we want to call them. It seems like engineer seems to be the word all the time now. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is everybody's have a basic understanding of it and an opportunity to get into that profession that they may not understand or know exists. And that's also a really big thing. So having done that, as I said, you know, we need to work together as a state. We need to work together. We have 24 LEAs, local education agencies that operate separately around the state. And we do need to come together in computer science education and really make it a win for everybody, for every student. Every student, I'm sorry, but every high school needs to definitely have computer science as a requirement. And even down into middle school and elementary school, we need to have it integrated into the curriculum. I'm not speaking anything that nobody doesn't understand or know about. We've had many conversations. MSDE is very aware of this, as well as other individuals across the state, all the counties and everything. So having said that, that's actually our proactive approach in education in order to battle, in order to look at and compete with global partners around the world, you know, yeah, people that are not so friendly who are doing very well in technology and computer science. And, you know, our students need to be able to, to also be innovators.
Yeah.
I think that's such an important message, because it doesn't matter what profession you're going into.
Yes.
Show me an accountant that is also well-versed in how to leverage technology for your job, and that's going to be the accountant that succeeds. Show me a marketer who is extremely well-versed in how to leverage technology for their job. That's going to be your most successful marketer.
Yes.
It doesn't matter what career path you're going into. If you can leverage technology to do that job and you understand its place and you can navigate that world, you will be more successful no matter what career path you go on. And I think, you know, it makes total sense that in my generation, when I was coming up in school, we had typing classes because we didn't have computers at home. Mm-hmm. And we had classes learning how to use Microsoft Office Suite because we didn't have computers at home that had those systems on it.
That's right.
And we had to be trained on it. And then there was this gap of like, okay, well, now after me, there was a generation of kids that grew up with it. So we stopped teaching them because they already knew. But then you get them into the workplace. Well, no one's ever used Outlook in their personal time. So we should probably be teaching them how to use those tools that you just wouldn't have exposure to on your own, even though you've grown up as a technology native.
So I'm going to make two comments on that. The first one is that as educators, we are educating our students for jobs right now that don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that that's why it's important for us to make sure that we're covering all the basics. And that's why you're right. Just like we had no idea that years ago, social media influencer would be a job.
Mm-hmm.
And now it is. And I mean, I'm not saying that that's what, you know, that's what our computer science degrees are for, but I'm just using that. We had no idea that cybersecurity wasn't really a thing, you know, mm-hmm. and creating policy and whatnot that, you know, so all these jobs are going to come into being. So we want to make sure we prepare our students for the best as possible, the best with the most help and support as possible. So the second thing that I wanted to go ahead and talk about was that these digital natives, and so I have children of my own, and I have a very intelligent, they're my kids, so we won't go there. But what I've noticed with the younger generation is that they are technologically very savvy, but also they're not necessarily wise when it comes to technology and how to use it. And that is not a you know, a knock on any of these students, because some of them are just very mature and all, but a number of times they have to understand when to use it, how to use it. You know, like I said, right now on Instagram, they can go on Instagram and they'll post stuff and do stuff, and they don't really think about the consequences. They don't think about, well, maybe I should or shouldn't. You know, they're just like, hey, I'm going to try it out. I'm going to do it. And I love that that spirit, that innovative spirit. But sometimes, you know, I think that they need to understand what the rules are and the consequences of certain things. And I know that's going to make me sound old, but I've been through that. And I think that it's really important for them to understand what that's going to look like for them in the future.
And I think that kind of falls under media literacy in a way, and just any type of literacy. I mean, if you're going to teach kids how to read and comprehend a book, you know, social media is going to be just as relevant, if not, you know, more relevant in their lives than reading books, unfortunately, yes. for a lot of them. And yes. they're going to spend more time on it. And so I think it's completely fair to teach them to try and understand some of this stuff. We can look at, maybe teach them what an ad looks like compared to what your aunt is posting on Facebook. Like, there's differences here, and we can call them out and we can get ahead and teach those things, because that's just what our world is, right? Like, this stuff isn't going anywhere. This isn't some trend at this point. Social media has been around for a very long time now. And so it's okay to just, you know, we can open up. We can talk about this stuff openly in class, because I think, in all honesty, the more you can get into technology, the more kids will appreciate it, because they are just surrounded by it now.
Oh, yes.
And we kind of need it in our world, I feel like, and at least in my opinion, the ability to get on any website, but social media in particular, and understand and comprehend what you're seeing yes. and who it's from and why it's there. Because I think without that, it's just, you have a more uneducated public, and that doesn't really help anybody at that point. So, you know, I think that's a good point. And I like what you mentioned of, you know, you're learning from these kids as well, because they're coming into the world with a different perspective. And each generation, each kid is going to have a different perspective on the world they see. And so that's fair, not just from kids, but from adults as well. You get a job, you go anywhere and meet somebody, you will probably learn something new, because they're going to view things completely differently of how you, or learn differently, whatever it might be. So I'm glad you brought that up, in addition to just, you know, what you like about education, because I think that's so cool that you can learn something while teaching these kids.
Well, I have to give you an example, though. I was recently talking to somebody, and for the kids, of course, you know, like I said, Instagram. I have Instagram. It's cool. You know, there's all kinds of stuff on there. And you have to be aware of social media, you know, like, to discern what's legit, what's not. That's a whole nother thing. But, you know, now there's an account called a Finstagram account. I don't know if you know what that is. Do you remember Finstagram?
Finsta is a fake Instagram account. Fake Instagram basically account. To remain anonymous, or at least post somewhat more privately. That's my understanding, at least.
Yes, yes, yes. So the Finstagram account, though, is one way that kids can get around, because their parents are like, share your Instagram account with me. I shared it with you. I'm like, oh, that's smart. Okay. You know, but here, yet all your friends, you know, see the real Instagram account that you have. And I was like, you know what? I give them credit. I do. Because I'm like, that's clever. And that's why I like looking at the hackers and things, because I will give credit where credit's due. All right. So now take that cleverness and put it into something productive. I hope they will someday at some point. But, you know, you ask me and I'm like, that's the kind of person I want to see, because they think about things and they're like, how can I get around this? What can I do, you know, to make this work? And I always, I don't know, when I taught, you know, younger kids or in high school, I always loved those students because they came with the greatest ideas. And so I appreciate that. I'm going to tell you're still in trouble, but I'm going to tell you, you know, here's the, because they have to learn about consequences too. But, you know, I'm not going to punish you for being smart. I'm going to punish you because you, you know, didn't follow the rules.
So, right.
Yeah.
And that's something that is, you're almost definitely going to hear that from a different generation, because if you grew up and you were an adult and then social media became a big thing, you don't really have to worry about, you know, you probably don't have to worry about hiding things from your parents or making sure your teacher doesn't see something that you don't want them to see. You're just an adult, and you know probably that you need to have some type of filter on this. Now, not every adult does, but there needs to be some type of filter. This is a public image. This is documented. It, whether you want to believe it or not, it lives forever somewhere. It's in some, I mean, the internet archives are a real thing. And, you know, there's some type of understanding, but when you're a kid, you're experiencing something totally different. And so, yeah, of course, it's like, I'm going to, you know, I'm going to put curse words in my caption, oh, or yeah. I'm going to post this picture, this crazy photo or video from a party, and yeah. only my, you know, 20 closest friends are going to see it, and my mom won't, and we're all good. So
right.
you would never think to do that yourself. I don't think any of us would, but no. because you talk to somebody younger, it's like, well, I guess you kind of do want to have this workaround, this different type of privacy, because yeah, if you're a kid, you can have these like little private conversations with your friends at school, but then, you know, that's a public facing image and you have to be able to maintain that. And, you know, speaking on social media, like I run our social medias here at Innovative, and that is work that I get paid to do that. I enjoy it, luckily, but it's not just like a fun little side gig. It's not just this little personal project. Like that is the public facing image of this company, and plenty of people are on Facebook and Instagram and LinkedIn. And that's my job to maintain that. And, you know, I didn't really learn. That's just from my personal life, the knowledge I brought, because I lucked into it in college. The timing worked out. I learned about it. But, you know, even I'm, you know, only 26, but I didn't learn about social media in high school outside of personal use. That wasn't a thing. Like we didn't talk about the how-tos and the do's and don'ts of social media in high school, barely in college. I mean, college was mostly the analytical side. We didn't talk much about, you know, the idea of being a full-time content creator. It was always business focused. So to be able to incorporate that stuff now, it's very real. There's no reason to ignore the fact that you can go online and make money just being on TikTok.
Right.
10 years, I mean, yeah, even 10 years ago, you'd see that and be like, well, there's popular people on YouTube, but
yeah,
to be on just some TikTok website I've never heard of in 2014, and
yeah,
you're making a living and making mm-hmm. far more than a lot of us are.
A lot of us are. I know.
Yeah, that's really man, the world changes quick. And 5 years from now, we could do a podcast. The three of us could sit down and we're going to look back and think some of these conversations are almost silly, because it's like the world is completely different than it was. And you got to evolve and you got to be able to keep up with that stuff. And
agreed,
it can be difficult, but it's kind of a skill you have to learn.
But it's fun though.
It is fun. At least for us.
I enjoy it.
I think it's cool.
I think it's good. And I love what you just said, too. You were just like, you know, 5 years from now could be completely something mm-hmm. different. We're educating students for jobs they don't currently, you know, that aren't even available. We don't even know about. And you're right. It's a constant evolution.
It can be so tough. Like it's easy in hindsight or easy from the outside to say, oh, why don't we teach this? But it's definitely, you have to build curriculum. You have to build all this stuff. And then by the time you actually are able to implement that in education, like we said, something completely new could come along and suddenly this is kind of like an antiquated type of class. So like it is really a hard balance to find in what we're teaching, how vital is it? And that's probably why we tend to stick to so many of like these core concepts and ideas that can just kind of broadly be applied in life, because like technology stuff is really difficult.
It is.
And I mean, you know, it's hard enough to get like new computers in schools. I mean, that's like always, you know, comes down to money. And we deal with that in businesses too. I mean, you want to have people with the newest and latest and greatest, but there's certain obstacles you have to deal with to get there. So
agreed.
Yeah. I mean, there's no perfect answer for it, but all we can do is try to, you know, drive the conversation and talk about what can we do right now with what we know, because that's all we have.
That's right.
I love the example of the influencer as a career. I mean, nobody studied how to do that. Nobody learned or was trained how to be an influencer as your job. But I think those are people that had exceptional critical thinking skills and an exceptional understanding of how to leverage technology. And if you have those two things, I mean, I feel like you're going to be prepared for what the next jobs to come are, whether it's social media influencer or who knows what.
Well said, Stephanie. I completely agree with you.
And in that vein, taking a bit of a hard turn, but also just in the theory of learn, or in the vein of learning new things. You mentioned it a few times, and I admittedly didn't know enough about it and started researching the term quantum that you've mentioned a lot.
Yes.
Along the lines of AI, started kind of looking into that as we were prepping for this podcast. So can you just tell us a little about what is quantum?
Oh, yes. So I'm going to start off by saying the quantum sector in Maryland is growing. It is actually centered around in Prince George's County. I know they're going to love me down there, but University of Maryland College Park. We have the first quantum company in the United States that went public. It is called IonQ. They are housed down there. They spun out of University of Maryland. They're down there. So we have a number of really fabulous companies that are located down there. With quantum, it is actually kind of a overarching term because there are different pieces of quantum. There's quantum computing, quantum networking, quantum materials, quantum sensing. There's just all these different areas for quantum that are applicable. In Maryland, we had to decide what is our strength within that particular area. So with IonQ, they're building hardware. We're looking at quantum computing. We also have quantum sensing. So they're utilizing quantum, and quantum is basically everything is happening all at once. So I and nobody's an expert necessarily. I'm certainly not an expert. So let me just go on saying by record that I am not a quantum expert. I am not a physicist. I'm just looking at it from a business point of view so that somebody doesn't come back and yell at me about something. You know. So, but quantum is basically, as it's been explained, that instead of everything following a very straight path, like in computing, you know, with traditional computing, it's, you know, programming, it's you do one thing, then another thing, then another thing, and then step by step by step. With quantum, at a very high level, all those decisions, all those steps all occur at the same time. And then you have a whole bunch of different possibilities. Hmm. So maybe that's the easiest way to explain it. So it'd be very cool one day to have quantum technology where that can occur, AI, and then the cybersecurity that's going to protect it all. So that's a whole separate thing. We also have post-quantum computing, which NIST is working with, and we're working with NIST as well on that to keep up to date on what they're doing. And that really is looking at once quantum computers really ramp up at some point and that companies are able to access them and also hackers are able to access them, because that's, you know, you always have to think about what the opposing side is doing and going to do with it, then you have to look at what our encryption models are and are they going to stand up against, you know, the attackers who then, of course, want your data. So that's really what that comes down to. So NIST is working on that. There's a big algorithm now, which is just basically a big mathematical function that is that they're running random numbers through, et cetera, entropy in order to protect the data by sending it all through this. So that's a little complicated, but that's kind of where we are.
That's
so
crazy.
Cool. It is really cool. It's really cool. I probably did a terrible job of trying to explain it, but we've got a wonderful group down there. You know, we've got the Quantum Startup Foundry. So we're actually attracting companies from around the world globally that want to house there. They want to do their innovation. They want to, you know, open up their company and work from there and hire local help. You know, within Maryland, we actually have a wonderful workforce and very highly regarded universities. And I'm not just saying this because I'm from Maryland. It is actually one of our strengths. So people want to move their businesses here in technology because they feel like Maryland has this amazing workforce in which to draw from. So they're not concerned about staffing their businesses, you know, when they come here. So it's, you know, one of those really fortunate things for us as well. So But there's a lot going on. We have the National Quantum Lab down there that just opened, and the Lieutenant Governor was there and helped open that. And so, you know,
cool.
It's just a lot of really interesting things, a lot of innovation going on down there. We went to the AD Advanced Materials Center. Hopefully I got that right. Last week, we had a visit from the UK and their lead in their business and trade portion of their government came, and he visited the UMCP with us and was able to see everything going on down there, and went to the AD Advanced manufacturing facility. They do quantum materials, and they were, you know, in Beltsville. That was absolutely amazing. We had an opportunity to go and visit with them, and we have possibility of some partnership between the UK and Maryland for some quantum opportunities. So it's been it's been really amazing.
It's amazing.
And that's another one of those things. You know, look ahead in a few years. What is this conversation going to look like?
Oh,
how
yes.
far? Like, I'm sure it will be
yes.
a completely new thing. And also, what an interesting point you made about whenever a new technology comes about, like, you have to look at it and think, what is the worst case scenario?
Oh, yes.
What is the worst person in the world going to do with this? Because there is a responsibility when you create something new and powerful to understand the capabilities of it and how it can be used. And, you often see even the U.S. government will hire former hackers who were bad guys to then be on our side because they have an understanding. And it's like, hey, we might as well use these powers for good. And you can make a career out of it and have like a steady job. So I'm always interested in that type of stuff when these new technologies come about. It's like, what's the worst thing in the world? And we're seeing it with AI already going pretty public with generative AI specifically, kind of some of the worst use cases for it and certain patches that have to be made to certain solutions or programs. And all that stuff is so interesting. And, you know, that's, you know, probably part of the reason I work here is because I find that stuff interesting. But
that's why we're all here.
Yes, right. That's why we're here. That's the world brought us together for this podcast because we just love technology and all the really the good and bad that comes from it because we're just so, it's just such an interesting topic. And that's why we're almost to an hour somehow.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
Are you serious? Well, it's because the two of you are so interesting.
Oh, wow. Thank you. But again, like every guest, it seems like we could have talked for hours, especially about quantum, because that seems like a whole can of worms. But before we get too deep, we have to cut it off. But
you'll have to come back when it's progressed just a little bit more and tell us all about it.
About the quantum. No, I'd be happy to do that. Yes. We're working on a big quantum strategy right now for the state as well.
You will definitely go on the list of people we need to have back because you've just been amazing today. A great technical podcast guest. You also understand podcasting, which is great. Great on all fronts, Kim. So thank you so much for your time and your expertise. But we will definitely try to have you back at some point.
Well, it'd be my pleasure. Thank you so much, Ryan. And thank you, Stephanie. It has been absolutely wonderful to spend this past hour with you discussing technology.
And thank you, listeners. Thank you, Steph, as always.
Thank you, Ryan.
We'll be back again in a couple weeks here on Innovative Leadership. Always great stuff. We enjoy it. Hopefully you guys enjoy it as well. And we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.